Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
Off we go then. Off we go for another midweek morning review movie feature thing in which we have the newly promoted Euro 2020 football pundit Robin Pearce back with us after a sensational start to his football predicting career on another program, Fly Me to the Moon, the Predictor Challenge. How are you, Robin?
Well, actually, I'm glad to be back on terra firma after that moon flight.
No, well, it opens up a range of other things. And, of course, from the delights of lockdown Australia, I know, what the hey, it's the way things are in the 21st century. It's Natasha Armstrong. How are you, Natasha?
I'm good, thank you, Alex.
Excellent. So we're having to change a few things around. So in June, you may find we'll have to sort of come to you at different times, etc. Different days, maybe. We might even switch to a Sunday. It's just a thought. Somebody who's always ready and up for the whole thing in all sorts of ways is, of course, Sebastian Mann. How are you, Sebastian?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex. I'm marvelous. Feeling all right.
Well, not that I want to give too much away, but having marked and second-marked some of your work already for your postgraduate thing, you're doing pretty okay. That's all I shall say. Nothing more, because obviously everything needs to work on that basis. But
well, that's really very reassuring. So thank you.
Yeah, I was quite fascinated by the your dissertation proposal, which worked very well. So that was great on that system. And of course, the film material goes without saying. Robin's already shared the lines with respect to that. But when we talk about film, the one who actually sort of chirps up with good idea, very good idea, it's Richard Fitzwilliams. How are you, Richard? How are you?
Well, I'm not sure that was a very accurate imitation of my voice, Alex. You'll have to work on it, you know, over the evening. Sundays are very good. It is an extremely good idea. I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine.
Well, then we may look to take us through that. In the background, of course, you can see my homage to Glenn Close. And indeed, why, oh, why Emma Stone didn't decide to actually do a kind of accent that kind of mirrored Glenn Close's accent in another one of her routines for Cruella de Vil, I don't know. But that's one of the movies we're going to be looking at. Richard, would you like to start with this one? I mean, I must hold my hand up. I have not shelled out the £20 necessary at present for the Disney organization, much as I appreciate that they could well sort of take up charity status, etc. But I figured I would actually wait just a wee while, because after all, fundamentally, do we really want to see that connection? Where I've already seen Jared Leto do the origin tale of how he actually sort of became an evil villain, etc. Do I really want to see the same thing with respect to Emma Stone going through that line as well? I don't know. Sebastian, have you seen Cruella?
No, I haven't yet. Doesn't immediately jump out as something that would appeal to me, but I'm sure I can also be tempted for the people.
Well, that is a case. Natasha, Cruella, or is it a case of I stick with the original 101 Dalmatians? She was not a nice person.
I really want to see it. I just can't bring myself to shell out such a load of money right now on the Disney streaming service.
Yes, exactly. I figured out, but I decided, no, I'll spend $3.99 with Amazon Prime and get Fiddler on the Roof. Much more as a routine from that sort of point of view. Robin, have you gone for Cruella as yet? Or is it a case of Rich has got to persuade four of us to take this route?
Well, I haven't, but I know that Paul Mount from Starburst magazine has. We've been talking about it, and he recommends it very highly. So as it's not a direct adaptation of a Disney animated classic, I may well venture to see this one, because I enjoyed what they did with Christopher Robin a couple of years ago.
Yet another case, Richard, of a villain like Maleficent, given the foreshadowing of things to come. Richard, I take it you said, forget streaming services. I'm off to the cinema to see this, and so should you all.
Well, Alex, I can only say that I've been very disappointed, except for Robin's endorsement, because he will be going to see it, by what everyone's been saying. But I do accept, of course, this is one of the problems going back to the cinema, is going to be costly. I didn't know that seats were £20. I mean, I don't know where, Alex, you got that figure, because you wouldn't pay that in London, and I'm very surprised that...
That's the cost of the actual streaming premier service. If you wish to purchase it from Disney Plus, $19.99, or presumably Australian dollars equivalent.
Yes, but why don't you go to the cinema to see it as a gesture of support?
Because I want to live, Richard, I want to live!
Well, having heard what you've had to say, I'm not sure you deserve, at least temporarily, to... I think you should shuffle off this mortal coil while I talk about a colourful and pacey invention of a backstory for one of Disney's most notorious villains. Yes, you had Glenn Close behind you, and indeed the one thing that Cruella doesn't have is a cigarette, which Emma Stone says is a bit of a pity. But there is absolutely no doubt, directed by Craig Gillespie, set in the 1970s, wonderful music, punk rock period, we meet Estella, who becomes Cruella, which is the nickname that her mother gives her. She doesn't do well at school. That will surprise nobody. She's expelled and her mother has to take her away. But en route, they attend a party which is being hosted by the supreme arbiter of fashion, Baroness von Hellman, played by the delectable Emma Thompson, and with terrific style and panache. And what happens to her mother? Well, three of the Baroness's Dalmatians set upon her and she falls to her death on a cliff. That is dramatic, putting it mildly. The young Estella, and she's, her hair now has the particular, if you look behind Alex, you'll see the colours. She goes to London. She befriends two urchins who were in fact thieves, Jasper and Horace. She gets a job at Liberty, but only as the cleaner. But when she's drunk, she manages to make something of an art exhibit out of one of Liberty's windows, and it just so happens the Baroness is visiting, sees it, and decides to hire her. But she spots round the Baroness's neck a necklace that belonged to her mother, and she starts to realize what precisely happened. So it's revenge, and how to get revenge on the Baroness. The answer is in the summer. I love London Fashion Week. I used to review it years ago. And I love colourful costumes and spectacular decor and lots of camp fun, which is what you get here. You become the rival fashion queen with the aid of Anita, who is a very influential journalist, played by Kirby Howell-Baptiste. And also, you have a most diabolical imagination. She kidnaps the Baroness's Dalmatians. She manages to sabotage the Baroness's public appearances. What happens when we're going to have the spring collection? Well, nasty things might get in that safe where the Baroness believes she's hidden her outfits and so forth. And you've got Emma Stone relishing a role where she's having a lot of fun, but so are we. The colour of it, the imagination that went into it, the music of the 1970s, top turns from both these marvelous actresses, Emma Stone versus Emma Thompson. It's well worth enjoying it, but also, of course, Cruella, whereas she's absolutely right, obviously, to seek redress after her mother's terrifying murder. But of course, she appears to have a very evil streak in her, which suits this behaviour, because after all, she has to destroy the Baroness so that she can rise to the pinnacle of fashion. And also, there is a matter of, no spoilers, but various issues And Mark Strong appears as the Baroness's factotum, very important role in this. What is the real background story? It's a kaleidoscope of colour. It's good fun, it's entertaining. No one is pretending it's subtle, but it's Disney, well, living up to the very best of its name. In the name of, I have to say, I didn't see the original because I'm not overfond, as Alex knows, of the animated, but there's no doubt at all, this is the movie to help the cinema in what has been an absolutely apocalyptic year. It's fun, it's, well, in fact, it's hilarious. It's colourful, it's got top performances. I would just like to mention Paul Walter Hauser as Horace and Joel Fry as Jasper, putting in good turns, and Emily Beecham as Catherine, who is Estella, later Cruella's mother. Wonderful. Go and see it. On the cinema.
Personally, I feel that actually if Jared Leto wants to have a sequel, he should actually take over the Cruella role and Emma Stone could actually be the Joker if there's a sequel to the Joker. Let's move on. Natasha, has that persuaded you? I can't say I'm persuaded, even though Richard gave a major spoiler in terms of why Cruella doesn't like Dalmatians. It's all down to matricide. Never mind.
It's not a major spoiler, by the way, Alex. Sorry, Natasha, I'm just picking him up because Alex has got so outrageous that he believes he can say what he likes, when he likes, and wasn't going to be challenged.
It's good enough for the Prime Minister.
That is in the opening sequence of the, or in the open part of the film, and so it doesn't count as a spoiler.
Natasha, awesome. I'm going to wait. I'm not going to actually go in terms of the cinema. I think I'm going to wait.
I do want to hear we don't have cinemas at the minute because we're in lockdown. So once I'd be happy to pay a cinema price for it, but I don't want to shell out like $40 to watch it because I think that that's a lot of money. No, I was interested to hear what Richard was saying because I do like Maleficent and I was interested to see how they were going to like humanize Cruella because I think that she's more... And I don't want to see more of an evil villain, but there is that sort of, you know, there's puppy killing and then there's sort of the witch that doesn't get invited to the birthday party. And I feel like they're two different kind of evil routes. So I was interested to see how they were going to handle her backstory and how they were going to try and humanize her. So I will go and see it just when the cinema opens.
And of course, you could actually argue that unless you actually cycle to the cinema, you've got costs to the planet as well that's involved if you actually go off to travel to the cinema and actually have a gas-guzzling vehicle to journey sort of 2 hours to go and see it. Nevertheless, Glenn Close, I still think, actually was far better in 101 Dalmatians, the live action, and 102 Dalmatians, the sequel to that. Robin, Paul Mount's given us a thumbs up. Is it something that's going to get the Pierce family in their gas-guzzling vehicle to actually say, we're heading to see that in the cinema?
Why bring my vehicle into this? I mean, really?
I'm having a Greta Thunberg moment. You know, let's face it, everybody in Australia loves her.
Wow. I mean, Richard, do you feel a lot of passive aggression going on today?
You know,
I probably will go and see this film and I probably will drive my gas guzzler to the cinema because it's an hour's drive away.
Yeah. Okay, Sebastian, is it one that you have been now convinced that, yeah, I'm going to wait and see? I mean, I will see it. I'll just wait until I actually use my Disney Plus subscription to actually wait on it, just as Raya, the Last Dragon, actually emerges shortly.
I think I am tempted, yeah. And I think with cinemas reopening, it's so nice to be back in one that I could probably go see anything and enjoy it just for the sake of being back, I reckon.
For a short while anyway, before we actually head into another lockdown scenario. Or maybe not. Maybe it's a whole new world that we're heading towards. Robin, do you want to actually go to Las Vegas for a caper movie and a heist movie extraordinaire? Or should we actually say, Richard, what would you give out of 10 for Cruella?
Well, I think Cruella must definitely get 8. Perhaps even let's be indulgent and give it 9. It's terrific. It's fun. Regarding Cruella's background and the makeup of her character, I have said little just to remind the team because we have to be very careful, Alex, of spoilers, don't we?
I just think that, you know, your fondness and love for The Devil Wears Prada has blinded you to the flaws within this particular fashionista movie. But there you are. That's a different
thing. But you haven't seen it.
I've seen enough, Richard. I've seen the trailers. That tells me all I need to know.
No, yeah, precisely. You are deliberately, as Robin has just said, you're deliberately being provocative. He is. That isn't he, Robin? I mean, it's just...
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So, you know that he actually dropped me, of all people, onto a football show this week, and I know nothing about football.
You've got to step out of that comfort zone every so often, Robin. It is important, you know, it's critical. Moving on, we could, let's have a listen, first of all, to From Cruella de Vil, part of their 70s, 80s classic material. This, of course, is Florence and the Machine.
Run for the hills, Cruella de Vil, Cruella de Vil. The fear on your face, it gives me a thrill. Who wants to be nice? Who wants to be tame? And all of your good guys, they all seem the same. Original criminal, dressed to kill. Just call me Cruella de Vil. Call me crazy, call me insane, but you're stuck in the past, and I'm ahead of the game. A life lived in penance, it just seems a waste, and the devil has much better taste. And I try to be sweet, I try to be kind, but I feel much better now that I'm
And there we are, Florence and the Machine. Robin, are you going to go down Las Vegas, or are you going to go spiraling, or do we go back to Richard and say, let's talk about a cow?
I'm happy to go to Vegas. I'm happy to go spiraling. I'm happy to go any direction. What would the team like?
Exactly. Natasha, which one do you want to go for at this moment?
I'm quite excited about Las Vegas, so I'd be interested to hear what he had to say about that one.
Sebastian. The lady has spoken. Army of the Dead. I came to this without having seen the trailer. And it was, I was a little bit reluctant, if I'm completely honest, because much as I'm a huge fan of horror films and have been for decades since my preteens, I'm not that much of a fan of zombie movies because I find them a little bit dull, a bit formulaic. And if you've seen The Walking Dead, then you have practically seen every zombie movie made since Night of the Living Dead in 1968. So Army of the Dead, what really persuaded me was the fact that it was written, produced, and directed by Zack Snyder. Now, Snyder, as you all know, is a director who gets a lot of flack for his work within the DC Comics universe, of which I am also a fan. So, Snyder, zombies, yeah, what could possibly go wrong, right? So, I kicked off the film on Netflix. It stars Dave Bautista from the WWE, an ex-wrestler. So you've got an ex-wrestler going against an army of zombies, you know, okay.
He's a Guardian of the Galaxy, Robin.
He was a Guardian of the Galaxy, yes. He was also several times WWE World Heavyweight Champion. It's all acting. So the film starts off and we find an army convoy, something goes horribly wrong, and a zombie is loose. Now, this zombie is highly contagious. Maybe it's a metaphor for COVID. I would probably think so, given that it was made last year. And a bite makes you into a zombie. So one zombie makes two zombies make three, you know, all this. So they're just outside Las Vegas. And then we have one of the most unbelievable title sequences. And all of a sudden it becomes apparent that this isn't actually a horror movie or a zombie movie per se. It's more in the action, horror, comedy genre that you would say Evil Dead 2 by Sam Raimi, where everything is so gloriously over the top, you can't help but laugh. So the laugh comes from shock effect, really. Las Vegas is torn apart by the zombies. You have a zombie Elvis impersonator. You have, hilariously, a zombie Liberace impersonator. Chorus girls go on the ramp.
Sounds just like Royal Ascot to me, Robin.
With less glitter.
Set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher. There's a thousand pretty women waiting out there, and they're all living devil may care, and I'm just the devil with love to spare. So viva Las Vegas.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining me at the microphone, Ms. Allison Crowe.
Ow, I'm gonna keep on the run. I'm gonna have me some fun if it costs me my very last dime.
Sing it.
If I wind up broken, well, I always remember that I had a real swinging time.
Ah,
I'm gonna give you everything I've got. Lady luck, please let the dice stay high. Let me shoot a seven with every shot. I'm gonna give you everything I've got. Oh, viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas.
Let the dice stay high. Let me shoot a seven with every shot. I'm gonna give it everything I've got. A fortune won and lost on every deal. All you need is a strong heart and a nerve of steel. Bright light city, gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those sticks up higher. How I wish that there were more than the 24 hours in the day. Even if there were 40 more, I wouldn't sleep a minute away. Oh, viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. Viva.
And for our listener, Richard is actually wagging his finger. So Las Vegas becomes a quarantine zone and has a Donald Trump-esque wall around it. It's a no-go area to contain the contagion. However, we get involved in a plot because there are millions and millions of dollars of gambling money in vaults in Las Vegas. And there's a plot to get into the city, steal the money, get out. So what we have ultimately is an action-packed cross between, say, the best parts of Walking Dead, you know, the parts where something actually happened, and Ocean's 11. The effects are absolutely amazing. For a Netflix projection, you get zombie tigers. They even ride zombie horses, which is something that I've never seen. It's all done in a refreshingly kind of tongue-in-cheek aspect to it. Dave Bautista is Dave Bautista. He has the acting talent of a breeze block, but this is the kind of material that suits what he does. And all in all, other than its length, I felt it worth at 2.5 hours. It's a little bit long. And we could have done with half an hour less. But having said that, it doesn't actually sag at all. There's nothing where you're sitting there impatiently looking at your watch thinking, oh, come on, let's have something happen, please. It never loses your attention. It's a good film, but a little bit overlong, I thought. I would give it an 8, which for a zombie movie, other than Bela Lugosi's White Zombie in 1932, is unheard of from me.
Yeah, again, reminded me an awful lot of Royal Ascot, as I mentioned, and I'd go for 7.5 purely and simply because I watched it over three or four nights, actually, because, again, it was two. I kind of watched it in segments on Netflix. But, Sebastian, have you seen the Zack Snyder take on Zombies meets Ocean's 11, 12 and 13?
I haven't, no. I saw the Snyder cut that was out earlier, and I do have quite a soft spot for Zack Snyder. I'm a little put off by the length, but with what Robin's saying, if it is a more original slant on the zombie genre, I'll probably check it out at some point. Seems like good fun.
And given, Natasha, that you're actually living in the zombie land of Melbourne, Australia at present, is it something which you think, yeah, this will at least provide a useful sort of work through the process? And then I can follow that by checking out the series Sweet Tooth, which has also just launched on Netflix, which is a absolutely wonderful side of things. In fact, I'm glad I made the decision to actually watch Sweet Tooth as opposed to Cruella. But anyway, Natasha.
I opened up the trailer to this one. I wasn't sure what to expect, and it just had me with the music. I love the music in this. I'm kind of the opposite to Robin. So I don't normally do the horror genre at all. I don't normally touch it. The one segue into that for me is zombies, for some reason. So I am actually quite interested in this movie. And I was worried it was going to be a bit flat and a little bit kind of, I wasn't sure how it was going to score. So the fact that it's got an 8 and a 7.5 makes it worth my time, I think.
And of course, Natasha, back in the day when you were an undergraduate reading journalism at the University of Lincoln, after a session, I believe, on Tuesday or Wednesday, where zombie-like the Origins of Modern Britain students would go into a well-known franchise to actually consume their coffee, etc. It's almost as though you lived the dream there and on the other side of the world. It's great.
Right. Just living it up for the breakfast.
Richard, has that persuaded you to actually check out the zombie take on the whole thing, if only to prepare you for the onslaught of mindless meanderings around a wonderful part of Berkshire?
Mindless meanderings. I mean, I have seldom, I have to say, Alex, to review you, I think, at the moment, I've seldom known you to be so aggressive. I mean, I think that, you know, we're... Mindless meanderings is a mindless comment in itself. So far as zombie movies are concerned, I liked World War Z with Brad Pitt. I thought that was colourful. It was entertaining. I mean, the 2.5 hours would quite honestly be the reason that, I mean, time-wise.
Only 15 minutes longer than Cruella.
I'm trying to understand, Alex, why you are so resistant to something that would bring joy, not only into your life, were you to see it, and I don't think you're going to see it. I think you're determined to find excuses not to see it. And just as you keep bringing up Australia and The Man from U.N.C.L.E., I'm going to keep bringing up Cruella whilst you are so resistant. But no, I mean, the facts simply are that it's not my sort of movie. I don't like horror movies. As I say, I did like the Brad Pitt zombie movie, but definitely not 2.5 hours.
Hmm. Okay, then. Well, we've sort of stepped to one side from thence and moved from one zombified animal to a wonderful bovine case in which there'll be no bovine stuff whatsoever in a movie which I believe is going to be released on Amazon or is around, etc. Was unable to actually track this one down from that point of view, but it's got a cow in the title, Richard.
Yes, it's called First Cow, and it won, Alex, in case you're about to make any jokes, the New York Film Critics Award as the best film of last year. It has, in fact, had critical raves. It's directed by Kelly Reichardt, and it's a very unusual movie. So whether the team will be attracted by it or not, but it will be rather interesting. I have to say, I thought it was pretty flawless. It's certainly a bit slow, but it is very intriguing. It will draw you in because it's set in Oregon in the 1820s, but the initial scene, it's an indication possibly of what might come. A woman discovers two skeletons together in the wood. Then there's the cut back to the 1820s, and Otis, known as Cookie Figuritz, is a quiet chef who is with a group of fur trappers. He comes upon a Chinese immigrant, Kung Lu, who's on the run. He's killed a Russian, and he allows him to hide and escape. And so they later bombed at Lu's shack. Now, that's near a frontier fort, and most of the action takes place there. Lu has a colourful past. He wants to farm. Cookie wants to open a bakery or a hotel. But the cow in question, the one individual in this settlement who has a house, is known as the chief factor, played by Toby Jones, a wealthy Englishman, and he is pivotal to the story because Cookie and Lu, they decide to use Cookie's skills as a chef, and they're making and selling baked goods, and the taste is such that everyone, or so many, a great number of people who are in the settlement come and buy them. But to produce these, they have to steal milk from the cow. There's only one cow, the other died, and as a result, the chief factor is very puzzled that it's giving so little milk. It's just the question that he doesn't realise they're being stolen, but equally, both Cookie and Lu are pretty convinced that they're not going to get away with it for very long. What they nocturnally they steal into the chief factor's garden and so forth. The problem is that when he asks Cookie to bake a particular type of cake for a local captain and a Native American chief, well, it's pretty obvious that the cow knows who Cookie is when they go and inspect it afterwards. And the problem is subsequently what happens when they return to milk it and one of them has an accident. Now, this movie, it's John Mangaro. I don't know the actor, plays Cookie, but tremendously well, very considerable sensitivity, a quiet guy, but this is a movie about comradeship, about friendship, about bonding. And Orion Lee is Kung Lu, and extremely good, also a performance of some sensitivity. It's interesting to contrast the characters as the total opposites of the personalities. Toby Jones, now, the role of the chief factor is very intriguing because it would so easy to send up a colonial official, which is basically what he is. But in fact, Toby Jones is an absolutely superb actor. And in this particular role, he adds a good deal of subtlety to it and a very, very interesting characterization. And also the supporting cast perfectly chosen. Visually, this is a treat. So I can only say that the trouble, the obvious loving care taken over the amazing way that the period has been reconstructed and recreated. I mean, that really is significant. It's very, very good. Some may find it a little slow, but if you stay with it, you become very involved with the characters. And there's this interesting quote at the beginning of the movie, which links to what happens, so to speak, at the end of the film. It's painstakingly done, but it is a pleasure to watch. The cast are superb. And as I say, there's also an interesting insight into the class system of the period, but relocated into a colonial setting. And the human behaviour, I mean, all these individuals are all too human, and you don't feel that there's anything false about it. So I can see why critics raved, and I would go to 10 out of 10. And for those who are interested or find the theme appealing, I would strongly recommend it.
If you can, of course, find it, or rather, you still have to hunt it down because it's one I don't think is actually has it got a theatrical release as yet, Richard, or is it out and about?
Well, I actually, Alex, you shame yourself with that question because I saw both Cruella and the first cow in. It's a place you enter it, buy a ticket, you enter it. It's dark. There are others there, and then...
So the answer is yes, it has got a theatrical release in certain parts of the country in any case. In terms of obviously the First Cow thing, the closest you actually get on Amazon is Poor Cow, which is completely different. Robin, would you be tempted to go and see First Cow?
I think that maybe going from Las Vegas heists to milk heists might be a step too far for me on this one.
Sebastian, what about yourself? I mean, again, it seems an interesting one. Not sure I'd actually go for 10 for the whole thing, but it has at least kept the animal theme going from Dalmatians through to tigers, zombified horses, and, of course, cows. No bovine stuff on this particular edition. Sebastian, will you be checking out First Cow?
I did actually get a chance to see it. And, yeah, I agree with everything Richard said. I think it is pretty much close to perfection. Yeah, echo everything Richard said. I think it's a really beautiful film. Visually, it's beautiful. I think it's a real, it's just a brilliant experience. I love it.
And did you see it in the cinema?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I sort of journeyed off to go see it, which is well worth it because, as well, a lot of it is quite dim. And I think if you did watch it on a TV, you might maybe struggle to make some of it out. It's the only thing I would say. I don't know, maybe just an issue exclusive to me, though. So, yeah.
Or maybe the screening facilities weren't up to spec. I don't know. Who knows? Not, no. By the way, do you want to plug the cinema? Where did you actually go to see it?
I saw it in... I went down to London to see it. It was the only one I could get. So went on quite a long day trip. And it was thoroughly worth it.
Going into one of the capitals of knife crime in Europe, Sadiq Khan's woke capital. Unbelievable, but still... So it goes. Natasha, First Cow, is it one that appeals to yourself?
I mean, it's had such stellar reviews, so how can I not, right?
When cinemas are opened again, probably in the spring, I would have thought, in Australia, which is going to be what, probably October, November time? It's what happens.
Knowing really. The government crackdown, it could be next year. They're quite strict about this sort of thing. Yeah.
So they should be. You know, it's all very well for kind of like, you know, the Brits to actually sort of open up things, etc. It's ridiculous. However, that basically wraps up the sequence for this particular week. We will head off into the future. Now, unless, Robin, you've got a couple of minutes. Do you want to very briefly mention Spiral?
Well, yes. What on earth is there left to be said about the Saw franchise? 9 movies later, they still keep on coming. I've only just rewatched the original 7, and it stunned me how cohesively they come together as part of a jigsaw. But that story was told, and here we are at number 9. So it can only be a copycat killer. It takes place 10 years after the demise of John Kramer, the original Jigsaw killer. And, well, it's Chris Rock as Detective Zeke Banks who's investigating the case. And this seems a very, very odd fit to me because Chris Rock is, of course, known for fast-talking, foul-mouthed comedy. With his stand-up routines and the kind of films he normally makes. And one would think that never the twain shall meet on this occasion, because if they're anything, Saw is not comedy. They are more akin to basically torture porn. So as Chris Rock's performance continues, the film actually morphs from a Chris Rock vehicle into a Saw vehicle, directed by Darren Lynn Boozman, who has already directed Saw 2, 3 and 4. And we have the same script writers on board once again. The torture devices are, even to me, very, very hard to watch unless you actually like seeing somebody skewered by his tongue on a subway. But as the film goes on, they do a very, very, very interesting trick. I mean, to begin with, you can barely notice the Saw theme, and it's all Chris Rock's interminable patter. He's playing pretty much a Clint Eastwood type cop. The copycat killer is this time targeting cops. He has a rookie with him that he has to look after. And it all seems very trite, and we've all seen it before. But the morphing into a Saw film is very, very well handled. There are plenty of red herrings, one in particular. which I won't mention the actor, but we all know him. And the music swells up and dominates the soundtrack, the Saw theme, as the film goes on, and it becomes more of a horror film, and Chris Rock mutes his performance. Surprisingly for me, I thought this film number 9, lucky to get anything more than a 5, but I will give it a hearty 7. And there's plenty more blood in this franchise yet, because they will be carrying on, I think. So twists, turns, misdirections, and some stomach-churning torture devices.
It's almost as though we're back at one, Scott. It's unbelievable. We'll wrap up there on that particular moment to say thanks to Robin Pierce, to Natasha Armstrong, to Sebastian Benn, and Richard Fitzwilliams. Keep watching the movies. That's what I'll say. Keep watching the movies.
Bloody right to say.